And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 287, your 2025 third base review. An absolute doozy of an episode. Can't wait to break down the four qualified players at this position and much, much more. But we'll get to that shortly. First off, you can find me on Twitter, at BDEntric, the podcast, at Bubba Bloom Pod, on Patreon, at patreon.com/BubbaBloom, and my co-host, as always, on Twitter, at RyanBHQ. Ryan Bloomfield, how are we doing, my friend?
We are in recovery mode. I think that's probably the most accurate way to depict things. We are in stage one or two of grief following that Game 7 gut punch. Brutal evening last night. Anyone who, you follow the Giants closely, and you guys have had your run, but anyone who follows sports team closely to get that far and not quite get it and have a big moment like that go against you, don't really feel like watching baseball right now. I didn't feel like going online all day today. I actually went golfing instead, which was very therapeutic. Very brutal way for the Mariners season to end. Congrats to the Jays fans for sure. No shade at the Jays. And that honestly was the Springer home run was objectively a very cool moment for baseball, for the Jays. But when you have something like that go against your team, it's brutal. It's brutal. No other way to put it.
Yeah, the closest I've been to that was different sport, but I was a big-time Kings fan growing up. Game 7 Lakers, that one.
Like 04-ish?
Something like that. I used to go. My mom worked for the Kings. We got free season tickets, so I went to all the games, playoff games. Okay. Yeah, that was Cal Bell time. Phil Jackson, Shaq, Kobe, Robert frickin' Ori. bad officiating, illegal, some may say, as research has panned out, but I'm still not bitter about that. That's the closest I came. That was rough. That was really rough.
But actually, it's interesting you say, because I was thinking about that earlier today. I was like, because I don't know, I fully admit I have not been a Mariners fan. I'm not, born and raised Mariners fan, whatever. I moved to Oregon 10, 11 years ago and have been following closely in probably the last 5 years, been a pretty big fan. So it is one of those moments where I am a lifelong Bills fan, Virginia Tech fan. And I think back, Scott Norwood, 1990, I think back to the Music City Miracle, back to Mahomes, 13 seconds, that game, Virginia Tech, Peter Warwick, 99, they were a quarter away from winning national championship. It's those types of moments where it's man, that hurts. And it still sticks with you, decades later. And I don't think this Springer moment will go away anytime soon. So.
Yeah, that was their Joe Carter moment. Like you said, it was a great baseball moment.
Oh, dude. And even right, yeah, I put in the Discord last night. I was like, it's this decade's Jose Bautista moment. Again, no shade to Jays fans. Our buddy Joe Arrico was there live game 7. How cool of a moment must that have been? But yeah, when you see every single highlight, it's going to be tough to watch game 1. I'll be completely honest, of the World Series, because everything's going to be
really
Springer. And
it's really easy. It's real easy. It's basically two words.
Beat LA.
That's all. I could help you with this if you'd like. I've been
that's the therapy session is just
beat LA. My first two words ever said as a kid. It just comes with the territory. So I can help you with this now. Being a realist, I don't know how the Jays are going to do it. I really don't, because it's just we keep saying, it's inevitable. Feels inevitable. For the dog, it's how many games, not win type thing.
Yeah.
But man, if the Jays can make this a series, I'm gonna be very happy about life. But yeah, I'm very realistic at the same time.
You never know, man. Baseball, I've always called the postseason it is kind of a coin flip tournament. You never know. Any team can beat any team. I remember I tweeted on Saturday night. I tweeted, how did Florida miss college football now? But I tweeted, how did Florida State beat Alabama? And then he responded with, how did the Angels sweep the Dodgers? Even that can happen. So who knows, man? Who knows? Yeah,
sports are great. This is why we root for them. The goods, sometimes, the bads, the ugly. That's the goods, the bads, the ugly. It's even though they're bad memories, but they're memories. So there's probably a lot of other fun stuff that went with it. Let's put it.
Well, that's the interesting thing is like, and I know we're kind of going off, but whatever. It's a third base review.
Trust me,
October.
We can do this in 10 minutes.
Who the hell cares? I was thinking about this today too. It's just like, yes, the season. And when I think back at the Mariners season, it'll probably always start with the Springer home run. But you also had some moments, man. Like you had Cal Raleigh's chase to 60, which was just incredible. You had them winning the West for the first time in 24 years. You had, I mean, even in the postseason, you had those moments. You had the game five of the DS, the extra inning game. And then you had game five of the CS, the Eugenio Suarez grand slam. It's like, it's that kind of, I don't know. Would you trade all that and have a team that didn't make the playoffs, and you know it doesn't hurt as bad at the end, but you don't have those moments in between? Like, as a sports fan, you want
those moments,
especially a baseball fan. The baseball season's so long and the postseason is such a crapshoot. You want those moments along the way when you kind of remember, oh yeah, I remember when Cal hit 60 the same night that the Mariners clinched the West. And you will remember that along with obviously the bad, but just a kind of a, I don't know. And hopefully this kind of rings with any team anybody who roots for a team that's kind of gotten close and hasn't quite got there. It's not to sound too cheesy, but it's those moments along the way that are pretty special as sports fans, but still did not end well. I will say that.
As they always say, there's always next season, Ryan, because you got to enjoy it. My season felt over mid season with a bum manager. So like, at least you got to have those moments, as you speak of, along.
But then you also think, like, so when the Giants, when was the Giants last World Series?
2010, 2012, 2014.
14? Have they even gotten close since 14?
Yeah, they had that year. They had, like, the best record in baseball with the Dodgers. They went five games in the DS, and they lost the Dodgers in five. That's as close as they've gotten, but that team was freaking really good. Like, really, really good. And that's, yeah. I wish that should have been the NLCS, not DS. That was a heavyweight fight. That's as close as they've been.
You always just wonder, like, yeah, there's always next year, but like,
think about this, Ryan. I'm a Dolphins fan.
But exactly. But like, when's the next time?
83 was the last. I was born the last time they were.
But that kind of goes into my point. Is like, you never know when you'll get that close again. You know, and to be that close and to not,
it could be
Yeah, and not pull it off. Eight outs away. But
8 outs away. Who's counting?
Yeah, you can tell I'm not. You know, not still at all. Maybe I've progressed to stage three by in the grieving process by talking through it with you this evening. But
you've been hanging out with me too long. You get so bitter over there, bitter old man.
I know. I'm still gonna rock the M's hoodie to FPAS. I'll corner a Rico at some point. Ask him how he felt about that game seven. Cool moment for Jays fans, just and for baseball, but just wish it wasn't against the Mariners, some other team.
We can put a Rico in the group before us at golf. You can hit into him if you want.
Yeah, there we go.
Get out some frustration. Does that feel good? This is for you, George.
Rico's about 200 yards out. I think we're good. Bombs away.
Yeah, they're still on the green, right? Don't worry about it.
Yeah, we good.
All right. On that note, we will pivot to third base as we continue our positional recaps of each position for fantasy baseball. Third base this week, we will have two outfield episodes next week. And then I think we head to the mound or something. We have the FPAS coming up. You're going to get them all eventually, but they're coming around the bend here. But Ryan, why don't you let the listeners know what we get to look forward to on one of your wonderful sheets per usual?
All right, yeah, similar formula or same exact formula as the others so far. This one's, we'll get to some of the specifics in just a second. But if you're just catching up or just kind of catching on to our reviews, these are the top 30 ADP preseason from the NFBC main event. That's what this list of 30 third basemen are. If you're watching the live stream, followed by their end of season rank at the position per the Fangraphs player rater, and then color coded batting average, home runs and steals for how they did all the way from Oregon Duck Green to Rare Steak Red. We're moving it back.
We only need one depressing moment right now. We don't need two.
So. Yeah, we don't, we don't need, at least space out the depressing moments. So yeah, third base, it's interesting. It looks terrible. Just looking at this sheet, for me, it's more the midsection. We talked about shortstop and that beefy midsection. Third base, it's not there. Third base was actually somewhat top heavy. Like, you had, at least according to the Fangraphs player rater, you had six of the top 50 overall players were third basemen. Now, some of those guys qualified other positions or whatever, but six out of the top 50 is actually pretty good. It completely falls apart after that. I think the biggest example when I was prepping for this is looking at kind of postseason mascot Lenin Sosa, who we've talked about on pretty much every review podcast that we've done for each position. So Lenin Sosa finished 2025 as the 13th overall second baseman that we covered some point last week. Lenin Sosa this season at third base was number 8. So the number 13 second baseman finished 8th at third base, which I think is a really good example of just like how bad third base was, even compared to a position like second base, which was also really bad. After the top, kind of that top tier of third base, this thing fell off a complete cliff and did so very quickly.
Lenin Sosa also finished 21st at first base. So,
wow. Really?
To let you know how bad things are at third base. 8th at third base, 13th at second, 21st at first base.
Damn.
On the Fangraphs player rater. So
good pull.
That is a big cliff. Some things that they're not even going to be considered breakouts, but just kind of stands out by looking at this board. Just when we did our FAB preview every Thursday night, we'd always be like, okay, here's good corner infielders to look at. Here's some third basemen, because everything was so bad all the time. It's by guys like Nolan Gorman, even though he couldn't hit for average. It's like, dude, third base eligible. Let's go. Like he fits the bill on these. You'd have like your Brett Wisely's or these just random dudes that would get third base eligibility in season. You're like, okay, you count now. Let's make this happen. A lot of that kind of stuff happened as well throughout the season, where they won't even be on the show technically, but they showed up in a big way throughout the season just as streaming options, because this position was absolutely horrific when all things are said. Like, Noel V. Marte, I don't think, is on this list, and he had a decent fit. Miguel Andujar, I'm just looking at the player rater. Colt Keith, like Brooks Lee was a very popular one late, Ryan. Yeah, Jake Berg, like there's just a slew of these guys that, yeah, it shows you how bad it is, because, like you said, it's top heavy. You did not get much speed at this position. You only have 1, 2, 3 guys that had 20 or more stolen bases. Period, which says a lot. You have
two of those 20. 3 eligible at other positions.
Exactly. So you're not doing that. And then when it comes to power, there is only 5 over 30, usually at corner infield. If you're not getting the speed, you want the power. You're not really getting that either. Like it's just a brutal position. All like this is flat out. We'll get to him very shortly. This is why we will continuously say, and others will as well, this is why you can take J-Ram in the top 5 if you want at any moment.
Yeah. It's crazy to see J-Ram's production over the rest of this entire position. Like, he is the king of the hot corner, and that did not change in 2025. I mean, also batting average, just not much there at all, especially after that top 8 or so of third base. So, I mean, the other thing, if you did go early at third base, you outside of Austin Riley, we'll talk about, you did probably do well. So out of the top 6 third basemen drafted, all of them except Austin Riley finished in the top 6, which that's good. That's stable. And that kind of goes back to what I said earlier about a robust upper class. But yeah, again, fell apart very quickly after that.
I want to comment again on the stolen base things, just looking at numbers. 17 of the top 30 drafted third basemen had 5 or fewer stolen bases. 5 or fewer. Look at it, you had 1, 2, 3, 4 of the top 30 had 0 steals. 5, 6 of them had 1. So, like, literally, you were getting 4 category players at best. At best. And that's assuming you got power, RBIs, runs, and average. A lot of these players, especially as we get deeper down this board, to Ryan's point, you're lucky if you got 3 categories out of them. And that will destroy rosters. Cause like we talked about Xavier Edwards, we're going to talk about like a Chandler Simpson in the coming weeks, like really good in speed, really good in average, destroy the rest of your team. And like, you have to build to cover that is very complicated. And third base was a massive, massive situation. It's very similar to that.
Yeah. So do we have to talk about the individual players, or have we crapped on the position enough yet?
Well, if we want to have the quickest episode of our entire career, we could call it a day. Or do you need a 45-minute Mariners session? What do you need? Like, let's talk. I mean,
for me, we do the show for the people. For me, I'd rather have a 45-minute just complete.
Some of the people might want that, actually. Some people might want
that. Michael C. in the chat says, Bloom, you were very diplomatic and classy about it. And that is generally how I feel. I was mad about Wilson and not even my team. Yeah, I could go probably longer on the Mariners than I could on third base, but we won't. We do the show for the folks.
Then let's get after it. Let's talk about the number one third baseman off the board and finished number one at the position. Might be, just off the top of my head, the only player that was the first position picked and finished first at the position of any player we'll talk about on this deal is Jose Ramirez, J-Ram. He has ADP of 6 overall. Finished the season 283, another just amazing bat. That's actually his best bat average since 2020's COVID year. If you think full seasons, best since 2017. Not saying he's had a bad average, but his best since then. 30 home runs, 44, a career high 44 stolen bases, back-to-back 30-30 seasons, Ryan. He's 32, so age is catching up, but the plate skills, 10% walk, 11% strikeout. Outside of the age, there's probably flaws. I don't see them, though, Ryan, besides looking like just a guy that enjoys a good meal.
No flaws. And that's not a flaw either.
No, trust me. Hey, I wasn't knocking it. I'm just saying, for a guy that steals 44 bases, not the usual prototype.
And 41 last season. I mean, it's back-to-back 30-40 seasons.
Yeah, that's crazy.
For J-Ram. And his age 32 and age 33 seasons. I don't understand it. This season could have been even better for J-Ram. And this is more a testament to Cleveland's lineup around him. Had 85 RBI. And basically the same batting average, same number of plate appearances. Last season he had 118 RBI. This season only 85, and not really his fault. But we talked about elite floors in the shortstop episode with Francisco Lindor. I think J-Ram tops that. And I think when you look at J-Ram compared to the rest of third base versus Lindor versus the rest of shortstop, there is so much more separation with J-Ram at this position. It is just such a head start to have literally over 40 steals of a boost over the vast majority of the rest of the position. Dude is a top five pick. We can always say age, but like, until I see anything that drops in the skills, J-Ram is that high for me.
Yeah, I guess if we need to, since we are reviewing things, I will, if I any grain of salt, you mentioned the 85 RBIs. I was kind of looking at that. This is where, like, if people want to, you know, pick at anything in his entire career, only 4 seasons of over 100 RBIs because of the Guardians.
His team, man.
I know, but for a guy with that kind of power and everything in a bag and average, you think more. But also on the flip side, again, team context here, only 6 seasons of over 100 runs. So it's like you're going to get the 3 categories for sure. And then the other ones are still very good. Don't tell them, I'm not saying they're bad, but if anybody wants to pick at anything, it's those. I'm not. I'd still be more than happy. Like last year, I wanted a ton of J-Ram, didn't get enough. I think he's very, very worthy of a very high pick, no matter what. But just wanted to point those minor details out to enhance. I was just enhancing on what you said about the 85 RBIs. It's been bleak pretty much every season.
Yep. Yep.
Which makes Josh Naylor's 2 years ago even crazier. And he had over 100 RBIs with Cleveland, I believe, 2 years ago. And J-Ram had 118. So 2024 was good for the Guardians.
Yeah. All right. Let's continue to try and relate every third baseman to a Seattle Mariner throughout the episode. And
that wasn't even on purpose. Technically,
or a Blue Jay. You know, screw it.
He's a free agent. Don't worry. I will if you want.
Yeah, he's a free agent.
I will if you want. Even better. You want me to accept the challenge? You know me well enough right now. I will do this. I'm
sure you could pull it off. We'll see what we do.
We're not going to talk about Jazz Chisholm. We talked about him at second base, but what I will mention, in an NFBC, he still qualifies at second base and third base. He played 29 games at third base, so he does qualify, but we played him at second. I have nothing else unless you have something to mention. He never played for the Mariners, so you got that going for you.
Yeah.
But anything else on Jazz?
Jazz. Now, the only other thing I would add is, again, just to kind of – it's just an interesting comparison across positions. Jazz finished second at second base and finished sixth at third base. So that that reinforces the point that the high end, the top tier of third base was actually pretty decent, especially compared to like second. But it's just I know I'm repeating myself, but it fell off a cliff so fast. But I think the Jazz for as much as the Lennon Sosa example earlier made third base look really bad, this Jazz example of finishing sixth at third and second at second base does make that kind of that top tier. And we'll talk about why that is here with these next few guys. But that is an interesting kind of counterpoint to third base at the top.
It involves the left column of the greens to that they jump Jazz on this one. Austin Riley had an ADP of 32. He was the third baseman off the board. Finished 21st, Ryan, as Austin Riley only played in 102 games this year after 110 in 2024. So a couple of rough seasons after being an Iron Man, essentially, in the previous 3 years. Austin Riley had 16 home runs, hit 260, 54 runs, 54 RBIs. But like I said, back-to-back just injury-riddled seasons, this oblique abdomen. He's got a bunch of, seems like, muscle injuries going on.
It's interesting. I'll use Austin Riley as the kind of jumping off point for this. It's just interesting who we think of as stable players and who we don't think of as stable players, myself included. Like if you were to round this back 2 years ago, Austin Riley was 26 years old, had just come off three seasons in a row of 33 plus home runs, 660 plus plate appearances. No rhyme or reason why you would see this pretty much collapse from Austin Riley over the previous two seasons. And yes, injury related, but it's like, it's just another, like something I need to think about of, are these stable? And normally I frame it in terms of pitchers, but are these stable hitters as stable as we think they are? And the flip side, are these quote unquote injury prone hitters as injury prone as we think? Cause I don't think anyone would have seen not only just the 2025 season, but 2 years in a row for Austin Riley of under 20 home runs. Like that's almost impossible to envision. Now, I mean, the skills look fine to me, right? Like the barrel rate's just as good as it was in Austin Riley's prime. If you're, you know, K rate went up a couple ticks this season, but if you're banking on a rebound candidate with the track record, I certainly get it. But I could have said that exact same thing about Austin Riley entering 2025, and he did just as bad in 25 as he did in 24. So.
Yep, like the biggest takeaway for me is the skill sets looked great, just couldn't stay healthy.
As Adam says in the chat, I can see Riley and the Braves be good values next season, bounce back at good prices. So,
yep, agreed completely. The fourth third baseman off the board was one of our favorite targets. If you obviously didn't get J-Ram, if you still want an elite third baseman, this was the dude. Manny Machado, fourth third baseman off the board, finished fourth at the position. 275 average, 27 homers, 14 steals, which is tied for the second most of his career. But you want to talk just consistency, Ryan, I'll let you go over it, but it's pretty much 25 home runs. It's pretty much a 275 or better batting average and a good chance of 180 to 200 runs in RBIs every single season.
Every year. And he's an old. Like this is my guy, Machado.
Him and J-Ram, both 32.
Yeah. Would it surprise you that I've already drafted Manny Machado for a 2026?
Not for a second.
I don't know. I mean, there's not much to add here with Manny Machado. It is interesting. You pointed out that stolen base total. Like, I don't know how the hell we project stolen bases anymore. I mean, this wasn't a Josh Naylor type outburst from Machado, but in Manny Machado's age 32 and 33 seasons. He's gone from three steals up to 11 and then now 14. Don't know how you predict that, but yeah, hell of a year for Manny Machado. Plays every single day, like you said, and the numbers over a full season will compile. And I don't really see any reason to think that won't continue in 2026 for Manny. He's been an Iron Man. I mean, home run totals since after the COVID season, 28, 32, 30, 29, 27. Like, batting average has been right around 275, just as tight. The dude's a machine, and if you drafted him fourth overall, you are at the position, you definitely got what you paid for, which is what you want.
Agreed. The one thing I can think of when we're talking about like Machado, J-Ram, other guys that have done it for two straight seasons, not like Josh Naylor's one big stolen base season, but the two big steals is kind of correlates with the new stolen like pickoff rules, I would say. So these are smarter veteran guys that they're not going to jump off the page. But you look at J-Ram, he increased his by like double digits. Manny's increased his by like six, seven, like just enough to keep adding a little oomph to their fantasy profile. Not all do that, because we'll talk about Rafael Devers, who was the fifth third baseman off the board, finished fifth at the position, had one whole stolen base. We talked about Rafi quite a bit on a recent show, but he hit 252, 35 homers, 99 runs, 109 RBIs, and a stolen base. I can't remember what show we were talking about him on, but
first base.
There are, oh, yes, first base. Very good point. So we don't have a whole lot to add here. If you want to get the full thoughts, go there. But I got to do a lot more digging on Rafi. Like, I'm not worried about the power at all. It's the strikeouts, yep, and the batting average, which probably correlate. But yep, there's something there, because everything else looks pretty close to Rafi Devers-esque, but there's that big jump is slightly concerning.
Yeah, go back and listen to the first base episode if you haven't checked that out yet, because we had a pretty good, I won't say spirited discussion, probably spirited discussion. We always have spirited discussions here, but pretty good discussion on just park factors with Devers. I just, neither of us think he's someone who is that subject to park factors, and we saw that with San Francisco. Even as a lefty, power numbers were just as good, if not better, in San Francisco than they were in Boston. But yeah, very, very, for me, very concerned about the K rate, the decline, the trend of the K rate. Like, Rafael Devers, seeing a 252 batting average next to Devers feels weird, but you dig in a little bit more, you look at some of the plate approach, you look at the Ks, it's like, I don't know if Devers actually improves that much from 252. So we'll see. But in general, yeah, like, especially when you took Devers, like, with all the preseason concerns about both of his shoulders, I think had a groin injury that he played through throughout the season, played 163 games, I think, because of some weird schedule stuff between the trades. So certainly got what you paid for with Devers, like you did with Machado. Again, if you went early at third base, outside of Austin Riley, this has been pretty chalk so far.
And then we get to the baby goat.
Your guy.
Really enjoyed him early in draft season. Then his ADP came up so much, though, that I took him with my first round pick in the meatball draft, because I am a junior Caminero believer through and through. Sixth third baseman off the board, finished second at the position. The 21-year-old junior Caminero hit 264 with 45 home runs, 93 runs scored, 110 ribbies, and even threw in seven steals. I was impressed by his strikeout rate dropping to below 20% on the season. I thought that was great. The quality of contact metrics, 14% barrel, over 51% hard hit, also great. Everyone points to the ballpark. Fair enough. Not going to deny that. I still think this guy's power, similar to Rafi Devers, plays anywhere. So we could see a decrease in batting average potentially. I'll let that slide. I'm not overly concerned with power. He hit 45 this year. The dude's still, to me, at worst 35 homers. I think he's still a 40 home run bat.
I mean, who hits 45 home runs in an age 22 season?
Yeah, no.
Like, I guess I could probably research that and answer somewhat quickly, but like,
not
but like, still, who does that? I mean, that's
who throws a shoe.
Who throws a shoe? Exactly. So yeah, I you'll hear on podcasts all off season. I think I made a great point on that. We listened to the RotoWire podcast with Erickson and Fred Zinke, and Fred made a, he kind of dove in on the splits with Cameron Arrow. And yeah, it'll be interesting. Like, power was the same home and away for Cameron Arrow, 22 homers at home, 23 away. So hit one more on the road. Biggest thing for Cameron Arrow was 100 points batting average difference between home and away. But you hit 313 at home, hit 218 away. Completely BABIP driven, however.
100%.
So, I mean, that's, again, I'm kind of going back and forth arguing with myself. Does the home and away split even matter for Cameron Arrow? I'm leaning to where, I mean, you're already shaking your head. I know where you land on this. I'm leaning towards not really, especially because, just take a step back, man. Like, he's going to be 23 next year. Like, I think gonna be that's 22 more important.
Next year. 22 next year. He's 21 this year.
This was his age 21 season? When the hell?
Yeah. So who hits 45 home runs at 21 years old?
That's right. So his birthday was July 5th. So he just missed the cutoff. But yeah, whatever. Dude's barely able to drink. And it's like, I think the possibility that Junior Caminero gets even better is worth... worth checking out in 2026 versus going back to Tropicana Field, which I get it. It's not the best hitter's park. The batting eye, there's some weird stuff there, but man, this is a freaking talent. And seven bags too. Like, that's not nothing. Yeah. That's not nothing at third base.
What if he starts to run out a little? What if he take 11 like Benny? Like, we're really getting interested there. My question is, and no one has answered it because I don't know if anybody knows, or we just don't have the beat reporters to do it. So they're rebuilding a lot of stuff at the Trop. Do you think they changed the batter eye?
Sure, like, that's why not?
Got to be on it's got to be on the table, right? Like, if every player complains about it that hits there, like, maybe, just a thought. Maybe they want to save it for the pitchers. I don't know, but that's also a potential option. Just throwing that out there, and then that's completely out of the realm.
We will have to hit up Colette at first pitch, Arizona, and see.
We'll talk first pitch, and Yancey Eaton, if you're listening. Do some research.
Or other Rays scouts that go to first pitch that I'm not sure if I'm supposed to name or not, so
that's
I won't.
True. That's true. We can ask that.
Ask those individuals
as
well.
If they do exist, if they do exist at First Pitch Arizona, we can ask them as well. That is maybe around as we play cards. I don't know. Just saying. Probably too much said. Jordan Westberg was the seventh third baseman off the board. He finished 28th at the position. We talked about him a lot at second base. Just an injury-riddled season for Westberg, who was actually playing really well before the injuries kind of derailed everything.
Yeah, so I don't really have too much to kind of take away with Westberg. Like, certainly was, I mean, I certainly can say with high certainty, if you took Westberg at a 102 ADP, not happy with finishing 28th at the position. I just think this is one of those lost seasons. Missed a ton of time early in the season. I remember we were talking about in news updates, just basically like the Orioles saying that Westberg was just going to have to play through injuries this year. Great. So I don't know. Disappointing year for Westberg. You expected a step forward. But what that means for 26, I don't know yet. But yeah, pretty tough, especially technically Westberg went after Cameron Arrow by one position, but it was 25 picks. Although for most of draft and hold season, they were probably pretty close.
Yep, agreed. Because Cameron Arrow was more around pick 100, it felt like
early on. And this is main event ADP, so this is later in March.
All right, let's get to Alex Bregman, ADP of 108. Eighth third baseman off the board, finished 11th at the position. It's like a bittersweet one here because Bregman finished it in 273, 18 homers, 64 runs, 62 RBIs, but only 114 games. He had that injury that never really got back, never really came back from, because he was torching the ball before he got hurt. Like, he was looking like he was going to be one of the best signings of the offseason. Dudes had hit 30 bombs. Like, he felt like everything was in place for a big fantasy season from Alex Bregman. And then the injuries derailed it, and that was a massive bummer to add to the massive bummer of the position.
Similar, I mean, to what I said about Austin Riley, these Iron Men who we think are Iron Men suddenly don't stay Iron Men when they get hurt. So, tough year, bittersweet is probably the right way to put it for Bregman. I honestly don't see too much of a change in skills at all for Bregman compared, when I compare 2025 with some previous seasons, but that's not really the point of this exercise. You were very happy with Bregman for quite a while, and then you weren't. And he opted out of his contract.
He'll be a free agent this year.
Yeah, so one of many offseason signings to track here. Would be cool if he went back to Boston, to be honest.
It would be. I wouldn't mind it, but maybe the Mariners. Who knows? They'll be looking for a third baseman this year.
Sure. They will be looking for a third baseman. Yeah.
Mark Vientos, ADP of 115. He was the ninth third baseman off the board. Finished 33rd at the position. Spent time in the minors and seemed like he was going to be a lost cause. Ended up coming back and playing pretty well, but finished the year 233, 17 homers, 61 RBIs. But he had like a final, I guess, month or so where he made people get very – it was August and July. He had 275 in July, 278 in August. He had 9 home runs in those 2 months to kind of give a little hope. The second half wasn't bad, 246, 11 homers. Re-add on Mark Vientos because I guess it's a playing time question, and do you believe the second half adjustments is what I'll call them.
Yeah, well, I thought the playing time was safe for Vientos, but he was just so bad, kind of tipped the Mets' hand, and obviously injuries played a role too. For as good as the late surge was for Vientos, how much of that surge was on teams that drafted Mark Vientos? Did you hold him that long? I don't know. I think this was one of our bigger fades at third base, at least one of my bigger fades, and this is certainly not a victory lap because the next guy, Jake Berger, was my biggest target. And they were equally horrendous, but just saw like a 1 year track record with a bunch of K's and just wasn't totally sure how that would translate into year two for Vientos. And interestingly enough, like improved the strikeout rate quite a bit, was up at 30% in Vientos's first two seasons in the majors and knocked that down to 25, cost him a little bit of power to do it, but, I don't know. Very, very disappointing season if you drafted Vientos. I think there were a lot of smart people very high on Vientos thinking he could take another step. And I could see why you would think that. Just did not happen for the Mets.
Yep, agreed. It was not what people wanted, but I'm curious to see how that second half surge gets people going on draft day. Very, very curious on that one.
Mark Vientos had 8 plate appearances against the Seattle Mariners this season. Went hit 286 with a home run and 4 RBI. Could have been a grand slam against the Mariners. Who knows?
Was it off of? Never mind. I won't go that far.
Off of Bizarro.
I was going to ask that, but I did that stopped.
Probably not. The dude had like a 260 ERA in a season, man. And then he
told you I could play this game all night long. He does have a similar skill set to Eugenio Suarez. It'd be a perfect replacement if they wanted to go there. Yeah. Jake Berger, you mentioned him. One of your biggest targets. One of my biggest targets as well. ADP of 119. 10th third baseman off the board. Finished 36th at the position. 236. 16 homers. 53 ribbies. Every time it felt like he was going to start hitting the ball, his oblique went out again or whatever other injuries popped up. With he had surgery. On October 3rd to repair a torn tendon sheath in his left wrist. That was the final straw of the season. So a massive, massive, just horrible season if you drafted Jake Berger.
Yeah, for sure. It was 3 separate IL stints. You mentioned the wrist. You mentioned the oblique. There was a quad injury somewhere in between. So went on the IL 3 different times. Our biggest whiff at the position at third base. And I don't know, man. Like same skills as the previous couple seasons. That's the problem. I'm still probably back in again next year.
I'm in at a depleted ADP. Like I said, when healthy, he actually showed what we wanted to see. He just couldn't stay healthy at all, which is scary because he's had like an oblique injury 3 straight seasons. So this could
which be is a problem, which probably will recur.
They call that a trend, but yes.
Our good buddy and Discord member and already off to a 2026 spreadsheet start that he posted in the Discord. Our good buddy TDK says, Berger, pain, pain, pain. I am now a vegetarian. So Jake Berger, you know, indirectly improving health out there for the nation this year.
Too much tendon in our burger, as Paul C. says. Yeah. Yes, way too much. Way too much. Let's just move past this one, especially 4 picks later. You could add Matt Chapman, who was the 11th third baseman off the board, finished 12th at the position, hit 231 this year, so the batting average was back down to reality, with 21 home runs, 9 stolen bases, that dropped a bit as well. Did spend a good chunk of time on the IL, but still over 128 games. Put up a good enough season that looking at the rest of third base, you're pretty happy where you drafted him.
Yeah, it's kind of weird looking at this line. It's like, because I had a ton of Chapman. I always like Matt Chapman. And you look at the line, it's like, yeah, 231, 21 homers, 9 steals. Like, that's okay. But then it's like, yeah, you drafted him as the 11th third baseman and he finished 12th. Like, you kind of take that. So was just very curious where Chapman's stolen base total would land. 2025, remember, he had never had a season before in his career of more than, of even 5 steals. And then last year had 15. So it's like, what's going to happen there? And kind of unpredictably split the middle, went with 9. Would have liked a little bit.
26 fewer games.
So 26 fewer games. Yeah. Could have had double digits. And I think that games played total certainly affects the home runs. I could have made a run in upper 20s, maybe 30 bombs for Matt Chapman. So typical Matt Chapman year. Like you're probably not going to get the good batting average all that often. Like the 247 that he spiked in 24 is probably a high watermark, but you get the power and now you get 8 to 10 bags. That works at third base and it doesn't cost you that much to get that.
And as Ryan said, he has a lot of shares of Matt Chapman. Shocker to anybody. He is 32 years old.
Yeah. Did he ever play for the Blue Jays? He did play for the Blue Jays, didn't he?
Yes, he did. One of the, yeah, well, yeah, he was a part of the Josh Donaldson trade. The A's and the Blue Jays on that one.
Yeah.
Two just legendary home run hitters that probably have a few home runs against the Mariners. I don't know. Probably while they're members of the Jays, to be honest.
Yeah. Probably. I would
probably in Toronto as well.
Probably. And in Seattle too. Screw it.
Yeah. Let's go for the whole shebang. By the way, just so you keep track of home, you're bringing up most of these. Alec Bohm was the 12th third baseman off the board, finished 16th. We talked about him at first base as well. If anybody is curious on Alec Bohm at first base, to do the comparison sakes here, he is 16th at third base, 26th at first base. So,
interesting.
Nice little gap there for Alec Bohm, who benefits from the average, like we talked about. Also, spent a lot of time on the IL.
Wait, 16th at third base.
26th at first.
Yeah, so that's not good for third base. Sorry, I'm a little slow tonight.
It showcases again how bad third base is.
There you go. Thank you for that assist. Yeah, I talked about Bohm already, but yeah, it's hard to have a near full season of plate appearances with 11 homers, 2 steals. It's like batting average is great and all, but you need some category juice, and Bohm did not provide it.
Yeah, 15 team only if that's with Alec Bohm. Let's go to the Seattle Mariners here. ADP of 181. Eugenio Suarez, 13th off the board, finished 3rd at the position because, my goodness, the 33-year-old Eugenio Suarez hit 228, so back to reality after 256 in 2024. But 49 home runs ties his career high from 2019, 118 RBIs, 91 runs scored. He had a great grand slam to help the Jays in the postseason. The Mariners in the postseason to extend it to
get just seven. Basically prolong the agony in hindsight. Yes. But
this one is one of those that there's no chance I am buying into this for next year.
Really? You're not?
Yeah. Okay. No.
Hit 13 bombs with the Mariners in the regular season in those 2 months after the trade, but hit under 200 in both of those months. So that's not great. It's just, yeah, with the Ks, you're going to have massive swings and inconsistency with just any profile. But Eugenio Suarez certainly meets that. So, his last pitch? Well. Yeah. His last pitch as a Mariner, since he's a free agent, and maybe he signs back with the Mariners. He does like, at least he likes playing in Seattle. I don't know how much he likes the ballpark, but I don't know, man. Last pitch to me looked like a ball.
Did you see the video? Because the umpire had a camera.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. Same spot as his previous pitch. It was called a ball. I hate like nitpicking umpire calls. It's the worst, but crappy way for Eugenio Suarez's Mariners tenure to end last night.
it, just in case, I know you probably don't care, but one of the reasons I'm out is the power. I mean, the strikeouts you talked about, plus you saw a 7% jump in fly ball. Is that sustainable? Maybe. So home run to fly ball jumped to 24.4%, which is, again, the best since 2019. I just expect enough regression into where his ADP is going to be that I'm just not going to, for a 34-year-old guy, not going there.
We'll see, man. I mean, 118 RBI for Gino.
It's great.
Like, dude, but, I mean, to finish third at the position at a 181 ADP, that is, God, that is good.
But we got to remember a lot of that came in Arizona as well.
Right. So a lot's, and that's the kind of the double-edged sword is it's easy to sit here and say, oh, it depends on where Eugenio Suarez signs. Of course, but if he really signs somewhere awesome, then the ADP is going to be through the roof. If he signs back in Seattle, not so much. And again, like I said, he hit under 200 in 2 months in Seattle. It's like, do you want to go there? So I don't know. Tough call, but either way, great season. If we're looking back on 25, thank you, Mr. Suarez, for that game five ALCS moment. That was actually pretty damn cool.
See, it's the little moments, folks.
The little moments in life, man. That's what it's all about.
All right. Isak Paredes, ADP of 185, 14th third baseman off the board, finished 23rd at the position. Even though he only played in 102 games, Ryan, 254, 20 bombs, 53 ribbies. I really solid 102 games. Problem was, it was only 102 games.
And I mean, this is a typical Isak Paredes season, right? Like you get the pulled fly balls, you get the homers. Batting average, honestly, for me was a little bit more than I expected. I was off of Paredes, mostly because our beloved original mascot was going next in drafts.
Yeah,
a little bit of a fade there, but that did not work out for me. But yeah, another great year for Paredes. I thought everyone kind of assumed that. Going to Houston would help Paredes a ton, and it did. I mean, the pull rate, it's interesting. Like, Isak Paredes went even more Paredes than we thought. 58% pull for Isak Paredes. That is his highest of his career. So he went even more extreme in that ballpark. Only 26?
He's young, very young.
Sworn Isak Paredes was like 32-33 years old.
He's locked in for a while too, so he ain't going anywhere.
That's a sneaky, if the batting average can hold somewhere near 240-250, yes, dude could push 30 homers. It's pretty legit.
Yep, I like what we're seeing there. And then you mentioned Luis Rengifo, 15th off the board, 40th at the position. We talked about him at second base, so let's really see where things fall here. Where do you think Rengifo finished at second base? I got it for you.
I'll say 25th.
38th, so almost the same at second base and third base.
Okay, all right. Yep.
But I got nothing to add after that last show we talked about him.
Yeah, no, go back to second base episode for the full Rengifo analysis. But again, congratulations, Luis, for your engagement this season.
Yes.
Always cheer for our guy on and off the field.
Most definitely. All right, now we'll rapid fire through the bottom 15 here. Pick 16 through 20, Matt Shaw, who had a lot of helium come draft day. The off-brand mascot, Mikel Garcia. Jonathan, I am Gene Segura, India. Josh Young and Carlos, who can't steal a bag, but hits for average, Correa. So we've talked about a lot of these guys already, but anything you'd like to add to this pocket?
Talked about a lot of these guys on previous shows just because they qualify everywhere, but I did want to bring up Matt Shaw, who just interesting. I mean, the path that a prospect can take going up to the majors and back and down and back up and that sort of thing. Like, a ton of was expected of Matt Shaw entering the season when the Cubs announced he would be their starting third baseman, and just, you know, fell flat on his face. Everyone cut Matt Shaw. Everyone forgot about Matt Shaw. Second half, Matt Shaw hit 11 homers, 7 steals, only hit 230, but was quietly pretty damn good in the second half when expectations were much lowered compared to previous seasons. So just interesting that through all the ebbs and flows, Matt Shaw finished 26th, but whoever picked up Matt Shaw midway through the season got the very good side of that 26th ranked finish, and anyone who drafted Matt Shaw and cut him got the horrendous side.
Yes. I want to mention Josh Young real quick. finished 24th at the position, 19th off the board. Horrible start to the season. Some injuries. Went to AAA. Second half, the first half at 237 with 8 home runs in 74 games. In 56 games in the second half, he hit 271 with 6 more home runs. Looked much more like the player you'd want to see from Josh Jung. He's 27 years old. I'm not saying he's like a priority of mine, but a guy I'm not going to just cross off. I'll have to look at some more of this offseason, but I want to at least highlight, like, you see the stat line, it's horrible, but he actually brought it in the second half. Like, looked a lot better in the second half of the season.
And that's the kind of stuff that can slip through. Like, I do caution just doing first half, second half, and assuming second half will continue on. But especially for some of these younger guys who don't have a ton of major league experience, like Josh Jung. I guess he's got 1,300 now career plate appearances, but really one full season.
It's just always
kind of trying to look for, yeah, injuries have been a big part. You're just trying to look for reasons to be optimistic. And I do agree. The finish there was pretty strong for Josh Jung.
All right, 21 through 25, Willy Castro, Slick Willie, Nolan Arenado, Joey Ortiz, Royce Lewis, Max Muncy. Anything you'd like to bring up here besides a lot of failures?
A lot of failures. This group was not great. Max Muncy, the best of the bunch, finishing 18th at the position and drafted 25th with the, what was it, late? Did he get LASIK or did he just get glasses? Max Muncy.
He got glasses.
Okay, it's good. Just get glasses.
It works for most of us.
Yeah, I don't need them yet, but I feel like
I didn't at 40 either.
Damn, 41.
Yep,
it's coming. I know it's coming. Yep. Want to bring up for me? I just want to bring up Royce Lewis. I feel like this was somebody who, if we time travel back to the beginning of 2025, it was like, well, A, we have questions about the health, but B, we also have questions about the way Royce Lewis finished 2024, which is really bad. And to me, I felt like Royce Lewis was one of the wider bars of projections out there. Could be any range of outcome, could be a first round player, could be someone who gets 150 plate appearances and stays hurt. In the end, Royce Lewis gets 403 plate appearances, a career high in the majors, 13 homers and 12 steals, 20% strikeout rate, a little bit better than league average. Power fell down, 8.5% barrel rate. That's pretty much league average power for Royce Lewis. So I don't know. I don't really have much of a take or takeaway on that. I don't know if you do, Bubba, but I think just interesting to kind of look back and kind of level set that Royce Lewis line and what it ended up being, which is nothing spectacular.
Yeah, I wonder what the injuries, if anything lingered, just the zap power potentially. Again, he's always hurt, so you can't really just say it's a one-year injury thing or is injury prone potentially already, sadly enough. But I like the skill set. I really, really do. It's just a matter of staying on the field. And yes, things backed off this last year, to your point. I agree with all of that. So you should be a bit, I don't know, I'm not going to say concerned, but maybe trepid. I can't think right now. But trepidatious. There you go.
There's no way that's an actual word. Trepidish.
Tread lightly is what I'll say. Because like I'm looking even at his just plate discipline metrics, and he was swinging a lot less this year, which is interesting. So his approach changed. I'm thinking he played hurt. That's just my guess as things went on and could have zapped his powers. But we don't know. We don't know, but still young. Still very young at the same time.
Trepidatious. The word you were looking for.
I was in the ballpark there.
Not bad. Not better than I would do.
26 through 30, Christopher Morel, the artist formerly known as Keith Colt, Ryan McMahon, Connor Norby, and oh my God, Hammer Candelario finished 129th in the position and unemployed. I have nothing here outside of maybe Connor Norby if you want to talk about him.
Yeah, I mean, that's the one I was going to bring up is Connor Norby, and there's not really much to say about most of these guys. But do want to and do need to acknowledge, you know, one of my favorite late third basemen entering draft season, which was Connor Norby. I thought the playing time would be there. I thought the power speed would be there. Turns out nothing was there. I mean, injuries did play a very big part of that. I think Norby missed the first month at least with some type of injury. So not great, but even when on the field, eight homers, eight steals in 337 plate appearances. So not what you're looking for Connor Norby. Again, not the end of the world. I mean, you drafted this guy. ADP was, what, 334. So sure, your post-300 sleeper pick did not pan out. Like that's going to happen. But was very high on Connor Norby. And maybe again next year, we'll see. I'll do the deep dive at some point. But that was a disappointing kind of late round third base call that I was all over entering drafts.
Yep, banged up a lot. That's the biggest bummer there, but hopefully a healthy season because he's got the skill sets. Like even that 251, 8-8's pretty good if you could put together a full season there. Like you could live with that for sure.
Yep.
All right, let's talk breakouts. Well, are any final thoughts on this board that is just pure hot mess after you get outside the top like six or seven picks?
Not really. I mean, just quick shouts to the chat. Paul says two IL stints for Norby, if I remember correctly. IIRC?
Yeah.
You never knew that?
Nope.
All right, man. Finally get to teach you something.
Yes, if I remember correctly. Good to know. Yeah. Thanks, guys.
That's a pretty common one, man. You should have known that one a few years ago.
Yeah, I'll work on it.
Michael Cicchini says, Matt Shaw had a nice second half, slugged 522 and 11-6. I think that's 11 homers, 6 steals.
Yeah, he was coming on late.
Second half for Matt Shaw. So.
Hey, don't turn on FS1, by the way. Just don't do it.
Oh, God, are they replaying the game?
Yeah, Bieber just took the mound grade through the first pitch.
Did he yell at Josh Naylor yet, or did he yell at the umpire, or did he yell at...
J-Rod hasn't hit his double yet, so we're good. All right, there's five breakouts, Ryan. Two of them are Blue Jays. would you like to lead the pack on this one?
We know. Not when you phrase it like that. I mean, none of these guys were really breakouts. And
no,
I guess we have to call them breakouts. Maybe there's a better word I could use. But basically, the bar to clear here is you had to be drafted outside the top 30, so they don't show up on the little bloom board here. And then they finish top 15, 20 at the position. And third base technically had five dudes that did it. A lot of them, pretty much all of them qualified at other positions. You may have played them at third base because their base was so horrendous. But Lenin Sosa, Ernie, I'm going to hit 500 in the ALCS. Clement, Zach McKinstry, Jose Caballero, and Addison, I'm going to hit multiple home runs in the ALCS. Barger. Those are your quote-unquote breakouts who finished 8th, 9th, 10th, 13th, and 14th, respectively, at the position.
We already talked about Lynn and Sosa at other positions. EC Light, you said 9th at third base, 17th at second base, 21st at shortstop.
There you go, man. It's another perfect example. Position. Yeah.
Yeah, but Caballero's there for all his steals. He had that run where he played a ton of shortstop for a while. He didn't even qualify in the shortstop list, to put it that way, folks, as a breakout. But he got a lot of run there. Volpe's in, shoulder was acting up, quote-unquote. So even though he ended up needing surgery, so maybe it wasn't acting up, but Aaron Boone, yeah. So it's a rep position. McKinstry is one of the few guys, though, I know we've talked about before that I am kind of interested. I actually took him in the meatball draft later on when we talked about him, because I love his positional flexibility, at least it was very flexible last year. Pulling up now, he'll be third base, shortstop, outfield this year. Only plays second and one at first. So still gets middle infield, quarter infield, outfield. But it's a guy, 144 games, 12 homers, 19 steals, hit 259 for the Tigers. He's played 144, 118, 148 games the last 3 years. He's just got that, like I hate to say Willie Castro, but when Castro was on the Tigers, they always have like that one or two utility guys. They just play all over the place all the time. That's just what the Tigers seem to do over there with the Kenshin company. And McKinstry fits that mold perfectly. Like if he can put together another 12 to 15 home runs and 15 plus steals, that's pretty good where you're going to be drafting him in these drafts.
And I think definitely definitely more of a draft and hold profile just because the ceiling's not very high, but he plays everywhere. That's someone you want to have on your draft and hold team. That's going to come into play in the second half. I wanted to just mention, as much as it pains me to say, Addison Barger. A lot of highs and lows to a season, which you would expect, right? And first prolonged exposure to major league pitching. But you kind of look at the body of work for Addison Barger. It's a 24% strikeout rate, so right around league average, with plus power, 11.5% barrels. So I don't know if he ever solves the lefty thing or if Addison Barger gets the chance to play regularly against lefties. We'll see. But I think overall, definitely very good season for Barger. It was more a matter of, from a, like a game theory standpoint, what did you do during that slump when everyone was all over Barger? Did you keep him active while he Segura'd you? When did you bench him? Did you cut him? That sort of thing.
Yeah, Barger is one of those. Ben and I actually talked about him earlier today because projections, he outproduced them a lot because he playing time.
Yeah, I would think so. Yeah,
playing time wise was much different, but okay. He's a guy like I remember Rob D talking about and stuff. We saw massive quality of contact metrics increases late last year, which carried over. Thus, there'll be a Bloomboard thing coming out pretty soon that I want to kind of peek around at. But Barger kind of carried that over into this season. But to your point, the lefty righty splits are dramatic. He sat a ton versus lefties, so like I guess quote unquote sample wasn't great, but it was enough to realize maybe we shouldn't use him out there. But he just destroyed righties, destroyed them. So yeah, he seems built for a platoon, and it comes back to the question: are we good with the platoon, even though he might face a lefty in our lineup settings? He's going to be one of those many guys where he crushes righties. Is it worth the potential lefty decline when you have him locked into your weekly lineups?
I heard you say built for, and I thought you were going to say October, but you didn't. So thank you.
Nice guy. All right, let's get some listener questions here from the old Discord before we head on out of here. Martin Sikulski says, two straight seasons of 110 or less games from Austin Riley. At what point does the lack of at-bats and productivity push him outside the top 8 in ADP at the position? He is already outside of that. Well, I don't know about the position. Clarify that because I haven't seen ADP yet, but
at the position could be tough. But I don't know if Riley, it may be this season. I mean, Riley might be right at that cusp. And if you're asking me, like, what do I think of that? Which I know Martin wasn't, but just so much depends on if Austin Riley can get healthy again. And who knows, man? I know no one wants to hear that, but I have no idea for someone who has been Iron Man throughout his career and then 2 years in a row bad. Austin Riley could very well go back to 700 plate appearances next year. Wouldn't surprise me either way.
Steve Stoughton says, other than Mikel Garcia, is there anyone you like for the next season post ADP 15 from this board above? Ooh.
Besides post 15 ADP outside, I would say Matt Shaw, but that's kind of cheating because he's 16th. But to me, Matt Shaw is like, God, this 16 through 30, just looking at this group, and I'll tweet out the board when we release the show on Wednesday. I mean, this whole right half of the screen is just awful.
Yeah.
Like, truly awful.
I lean. Actually, not even on this board. Give me Noelvi Marte.
Okay. Didn't bring him up. Yeah, good. Okay. Why? I go into a little bit more there.
When it comes to Noelvi Marte, I brought him up at the very, very beginning, kind of highlighting some second half guys who didn't qualify here, but we kept talking fab shows. Noelvi Marte is a guy that missed a lot of the season due to suspension, but finished in 90 games for the Reds, hit .263, 14 homers, 10 steals, 51 RBIs, and 45 runs. Like, that projects out to a pretty good season if you keep everything rolling there. He's a guy that we saw play. He's going to have outfield and third base eligibility, which is a plus as well, but you want third base only. But it's like in August or in July, he hit .278. In August, he hit .297. He hit 9 of his home runs in those 2 months. Like, you saw a guy that really started clicking, and then we saw in the postseason, he had some massive at-bats for that Reds team. Like, it's a young player we've always wanted to see, but there's injuries and the suspension. He's 24 years old. Like, he's a guy that I could see taking a massive jump, and I think come next year, he's easily in the top 15, if not top. I wouldn't be shocked if he's a top 10 third baseman next year. Like, he's that good if he gets a full season in Cincinnati.
I like that. Good call. Would have slipped through the cracks on my end. Mitch in the chat mentions Miguel Vargas, not on the board, but had a decent season. Did we mention Vargas on the first base show? I can't remember. We may have. But yeah, Miguel, absolutely. Good shout out.
He was 17th at third base.
Was he? Okay.
Yeah.
Decent season for Mr.
Which
Vargas.
Which means we probably did not mention him at first base. If he was 17th at third base, he was way off the board at first base. So
yeah. But yeah, decent season. I don't know if there's another step there for Miguel Vargas, but
fell off towards the end.
But yeah, decent season. Qualified at the end of the season. I think qualified at three different spots. I think was outfield eligible.
Just third and first. Oh, by the end of the season but next year it's just third and first.
Yeah, I'm saying it by the end of 2025. Okay. I think he.
Yeah, you look at his numbers: 234, 16 homers, 6 steals. Like, it fell off. It wasn't that great. Like, he has really good early and never really got it going after the injury.
Injury. Yep.
Which means maybe he bounces back this year. He's young as well. All right. Grizzmania 99. How much longer can we rely on J-Ram until the wheels fall off?
I mean, for redraft, I have zero hesitations. But if you're talking like a keeper context and you have to, I don't know, I'm just making up keeper league rules at this point, but I know a lot of keeper leagues, like, you have to extend someone for 3 years or something, or the salary goes up $5 a year or something. There will be a time, maybe in the next 2-3 years, that where we will have that conversation. It's a good question. It's at some point, Father Time's going to get all these guys. Father Time got us. Coming for J-Ram next, but I think take your time, Father Time. Yeah, take your time. For 26, I don't see any reason to be skeptical at all.
Sean Chard says, currently doing a couple NFBC drafts and holds a couple. Respect, Sean. Third base for 2026 seems too weak overall and compared to this past year, so thinks it's even worse. Is that an early consensus, and does that push up value a bit for some of the top guys? I'd say it, especially to draft and hold where you need like at least three of them. Yeah. I think it makes those top guys even more important personally, but maybe I'm wrong.
I would agree. And again, we the focus of this show is looking back at 25, but it's just seeing that massive gap between the top seven or whatever third baseman versus the rest of the group. I think it does, and the market knows this. The market will push those elite third basemen up, and probably should, given the gap. And last but not least, I know Sean is a big Jays fan, so congrats, Sean. Go get LA.
Yes, go beat LA. Beat LA. Get it right, Ryan. Let me work on this with you. BP says, not a question, but third base is kind of boring. Kinda.
Hey, hopefully kinda. We spiced it up for y'all tonight. We tried.
Dave Petrozziello says, judging by the one draft I saw someone post on Twitter, it seems like we'll get a big discount on Austin Riley. I think it was a pick in the 70s. Under the hood, it still looks really good. Any interest if he is going in the 70s? You, I think, already said yes.
Yeah, certainly. Certainly is there an interest. I mean, anytime you just take a step back, look at the profile, this is someone who's consistently been drafted in the top 40, top 35, and is still at prime age, now going 70s just because of injury. Sure.
Yep, I'm there. B. Welch says, is there any hope for Ke'Bryan Hayes, or is he only relevant for leagues with outs above average as a category? Dude hits for, at least he was hitting for average, but other than that, there ain't much.
Yeah, and I thought there would be. I wrote Ke'Bryan Hayes' box, or I edited. Yeah, he didn't. I thought there was like a Cincinnati post-trade bump. There was not. Ke'Bryan Hayes just gives you nothing from a category counting stat standpoint. And I think even in Cincinnati, it's kind of that like anti Devers argument where like the elite power hitters, it doesn't matter what park they play in. Well, if you have no power, it also doesn't really matter what park you play in.
It feels like we got hope because in August, right after the deadline, Ke'Bryan hit 256, two homers, 11 runs scored and 2 stolen bases. So there was like that false optimism for a second.
But then September happened.
Disappeared. Then it was gone. It's gone. Mailman Mike says, is there any upside at all in Joey Ortiz? I really don't think so. Maybe a batting average somewhere in there, but I don't.
Yeah, I don't mind. He's still young for playing time, and he's young. Yeah, exactly. So you never know. I mean, Geraldo Perdomo just happened this season. You never know.
His own teammate Bryce Terang just went nuclear this past season. So yep. Yeah.
So wouldn't I would say it wouldn't shock me if Ortiz took a step forward, but I don't see much in the skills that would, you know, expect that to happen.
Yeah, it has to be a gigantic shift of philosophy this offseason. And that'll wrap it up, Ryan. Any final thoughts? We did it. We made it. It's over. Michael C. in the chat says Caleb Durbin. Anybody? That's another guy. He finished 15th at the position. So another guy to keep in mind. He really turned it on in the second half. So I think he's I like him more than Joey Ortiz. I'll say that much. Caleb Durbin at 256, 11 homers, 18 steals. And like I said, in the second half, we saw a lot more Caleb Durbin. He only had 251, but we saw 7 home runs and 10 steals in the second half. So yeah, a lot more of the stuff we were looking for from Caleb Durbin.
Yeah, no, good call, Cicchini on Durbin. I must have had breakout fatigue after listing 5 guys that all sucked and ended at 14th. But then Durbin,
how bad the position is.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing I would add with Durbin is just like, 11 homers in 506 plate appearances. Like, to me, I think that's, it's weird to say for someone in their first MLB season, that might be his ceiling. Like, the guy is 5'7", has a Mason Wynn-ish barrel rate, 4%, not great. So, I'm all that to say, like, you need more than 18 bags if you're going to rely on Caleb Durbin. You need more than 18 bags to get the value there. And again, could very much happen, like, in his sophomore year. Not throwing shade there. It's just the power, I think, is pretty much capped out at this point for me.
I actually have one more player for you because I want you to answer this one. What about Brett Beatty?
Oh,
your boy.
I don't know. Where did he finish?
19th.
It was 19th? God. Yep. Massive uptick in power for Brett Beatty. And this is someone who, like, we kind of get that prospect fatigue for Brett Beatty because this is technically his fourth season in Major League Baseball, but has never really been given a chance to go. And yeah, power spike this year. Still didn't play every day. I think it was pretty much a strong side platoon, but nice step forward for someone who I think a lot of folks can forget about, these kind of post-type prospects, their third, fourth time coming back up to the majors. So good call, man. What do you think of Beatty?
I liked him a lot more towards the end. He played a lot of second base. He's going to get second base, third base next year, but we saw the power tick up to 18 home runs, which is good to see. And his barrels, hard hits all increased. Like, you saw the right improvements you wanted to see. He still hit like 254, 255, which I can live with in this era of baseball. Played 130 games. So if we can get a guy that, like, I guess it comes down to what's the Mets philosophy. Is it Vientos time? Is it Beatty time? Who plays set? Like, there's a lot of questions still to be answered there. But I'm much more interested in Beatty now than I was entering last season.
Yeah, it's fair. You, I like Beatty on the Fab previews. I think you laughed me off the stage on one of them, but
I added him towards the end.
There we go. Finally came around. Just like Aaron Nola that you wrote up in for the Patreon this week. Finally coming around, man. Finally,
I don't know if that's necessarily coming around as just at least admitting that he shouldn't have had like a 6 ERA. He should have been like a high 4s.
Coming around, like I said. There we go. We're back.
Yeah. Let's end it there.
Let's end it there.
On that note.
Austin Nola signed with the Braves today. So.
And no wonder Springer went deep. He almost got hit in 2 straight pitches by Kirby in his first at bat.
All right, now we're done. Now we're done.
All right. On that note. Thanks for listening, everybody. I hope you guys had some fun with the third base position. It's a rough one. It's a rough one. But we'll be back with you guys next week. We're 2 outfield reviews. 2. I think it's all we do is 2. We'll have to double check our notes from previous years. But we're going to go deep into the position for you through that and much, much more. But until then, make sure you follow Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and on Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom. I am at BDentric. This is Bubba and the Bloom, episode 287. Catch y'all next time.